Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It is a Sports Daily on a Monday, and it is a Reaction Monday, and we have a whole lot to react to here on this Monday. The Royals are back in the postseason. Feels like forever. One of three teams ever to lose 100 games and then reach the postseason the next season. And we are glad to have them there. You'll hear all that postseason baseball right here on KFH. So we will have that for you. As we get things going, the Chiefs win, but at what cost? Now, 4-0, it's been, I don't want to call it an ugly 4-0, because it's never ugly when you're 4-0, but man, it's been tough, and it's going to get tougher. We'll get into the latest there with some injury news. We've got K-State on another massive win, and it appears they're, I guess, Tommy, closer to the Arizona game than the BYU game after that performance, and KU continues to struggle. We will continue to cover all of it. We'll get it all for you today on this Monday. Jad Chambers producing this thing, manning that IHOP hotline for you at 869-1240. You can react that way with us here on the show today. You can also leave us your comments on our video streams on YouTube, on X, on Facebook, and of course on 12 News. Connected Plus, all different ways you can get us. You can leave us voice messages through the Odyssey app if you're listening to us that way. It's all here for you. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Happy Monday. Good to see you. It's been a busy weekend, a lot to react to. Of course, you mentioned the Royals, and so it's kind of, you know, that time of year where you're keeping one eye on baseball, you're keeping one eye on football. So much to get to, so much to dissect today, so looking forward to jumping right in.
Yeah, I mean, I think we start with the Royals as much as the Chiefs are right there with the injuries and everything else that we're looking at on them. It's an interesting feeling because two times now in the last, handful of weeks, they've been on seven-game losing streaks. But, Tommy, it feels like, you know, if Vinny Pasquantino can go, and I tend to think that he will, because I think that's the way this thing has been trending based on his body language and everything we're seeing, the way their bullpen's going right now, the starting pitching is back in a groove, they were able to set their rotation. This looks pretty good. This looks pretty good.
It does, and it's just shocking, you know, how we've kind of changed things up with the Royals from a week ago to now, and that's like this up and down roller coaster type team that loses seven in a row two different times in basically the month of September. And then from there, you look at, okay, they're, by all conventional wisdom, limping their way into the playoffs. And maybe offensively, they are to an extent. Offensively, they're, you know, sort of iffy at this point. But from a pitching perspective, the pitching is pretty solid, both starting pitching and the bullpen. That's all there. If they can hold opponents, and in this case, Baltimore coming up in the wild card series, if they can hold Baltimore's offense down with the pitching that Kansas City can have and that they bring to the table, then you don't really necessarily need a ton of offense game after game. So this is, I remember you saying this. I'm actually going to give you credit because I remember you saying all the way back probably in, May or June, that this is a team, a Royals team that is set up for a three-game series. It's a Royals team that is set up for a playoff push. If you can get your rotation where you want it in entering that series, which they're going to be able to have that rotation set up how they want it for the Baltimore series with Reagans and Lugo and then Waka if necessary, they're in a position where with a small sample size, you know, they can get a lot done.
Yeah, and look, they are built for this because they have two co-aces. And they're I also think that they are equipped to win a longer series if they can get enough offense. But man, a three-game series, when you throw those two pitchers, you like your chances, right? Those guys have both been incredible this year. It's all matchup dependent. We know this about the Major League Baseball postseason. I can't decide if I would have rather seen Houston or Baltimore. The problem with Baltimore is you got to face Corbin Burns in game one. And he has given up, Tommy, he's given up four runs in the month of September over five starts. In 30 innings, he's given up four runs. He's been incredible in September. So you're going to have to bring your A game. I agree with going with Reagans in game one. I think you go power to power, but this is where you like the Royals. Then you like your chances in game two, even if you can't get game one. And then the depth of the rotation starts to play through in a three-game series. We also like that the bullpen's been really good. So at any sign of trouble, Kansas City can go that route if they need to. Now, that is a new development, right? We knew that they had a couple of guys we liked, but everybody's been pretty good lately. I don't trust that completely. I don't trust it as much as I trust the starting pitching. So if I'm Quatraro, I probably don't have a quick trigger. I can tell you that Burns pitched against the Royals twice this year, both games all the way back in April. It was twice over about 2 weeks, and he pitched. He didn't make it to the sixth inning in either of those games. It was, you know, 5 2/3 each time. One game he gave up 3 runs. One game he gave up 2 runs. I mean, if you can get 3 runs off of him in 5 2/3 and you're the Royals, I think you like your chances. But again, that was in April. In September, he has been nails. He's been lights out. He, even in the game that they lost to the Yankees, that critical game, was that on Thursday? He was really good. And then their bullpen blew it. So I don't know. I like it. I do like the Royals' chances. If you're having me, you know, pick a series, I got to put my money where my mouth is. I've liked the Royals' chances in a three-game series. So I like the Royals' chances in a three-game series. I really, really hope Vinny Pasquantino plays and is effective and can get up there and give them what they've desperately needed, really, since he's been gone, Tommy. And that's a bat in the middle of the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I think that really when everything panned out yesterday the way that it did with Detroit losing, and now that we know that the Tigers are going to go to Houston and take on the Astros, the Royals will go to Baltimore and take on the Orioles, I think that's the best case scenario for Kansas City because, you know, the one thing that Houston can do is they can get hot really quick, especially offensively. I mean, it's a team that for a long time, early in the regular season, didn't really look like they were a playoff team. They didn't really turn things on until probably midway through, maybe a little bit after the midway mark of the regular season. And now they are one of the hottest teams in baseball. They look like vintage Astros over the last decade or so. And that's a team that I'm not necessarily sure that the Royals match up great against. And going back, I mean, I remember when the Royals played the Astros in Houston not that long ago, and it wasn't a great outing for the Royals. It wasn't a great series for them. And so I think that the Orioles give the Royals that opportunity. And this is not taking anything away from Baltimore, but just in the way that they match up, I think it gives the Royals a better opportunity to be able to fully deploy their pitching the way that they want to be able to pick and choose places to use their bullpen in a more aggressive way than I think they would have had to against the Astros. I think that it really, honestly, from a bullpen perspective, if they were to take on Houston, maybe would have been more defensive with their bullpen than what they're going to be able to do, I think, against Baltimore in this series. So I like this matchup a lot for Kansas City. By the way, we talked a lot about the bullpen, how it kind of came out of nowhere. I texted this to you the other day. The final 2 weeks of the regular season, the Royals have the second best bullpen ERA in Major League Baseball. Outside of Carlos Hernandez, the Royals' much maligned bullpen has been lights out in the final couple weeks of the regular season.
But I would ask you this. Do you trust that?
I think I do. I mean, I think I do because it's not like they were the second best bullpen in Major League Baseball back in May or June. They're the second best bullpen in Major League Baseball right now. And so I'm hopeful that carries over into this wild card series.
I am too. Don't get me wrong. And I hope it's great and I hope it's fantastic. But I would tell you this, I as we sit here the day before the series starts, I trust the starting pitching more than I trust the middle of the bullpen. So that's, they've been great lately, and that's a big reason why the Royals are in this postseason. But we saw them for a full year, and I would much rather see Cole Reagans pitching in the sixth inning than Zerpa.
Don't you think that playing the Orioles gives you a better chance of seeing Cole Reagans in the sixth than if you're playing the Astros in Houston?
Both lineups are good. I saw something this morning. The Orioles, what was it? I'm going to misquote this, so forgive me if I'm not exactly right. They have I think, 8 players in that lineup who have had 400 at bats this year, and they all have an OPS plus of over like at 106. Like, they are deep. That's a deep lineup. I don't know which, like, history tells me I'd rather play the Orioles than the Astros, right? The Astros just know how to win postseason games. And I think that's probably the way I lean if you had to have me pick somebody they would play. But the Orioles lineup is deep. It's going to be tough. They're going to have to score some runs. That's why the Vinny thing is big for me. I have this like thing in the back of my head biting at me that Tommy Pham is going to be big in anything the Royals do in the postseason as a table setter for some reason. So I hope that that's true, and I hope that that comes true. But I think it'll be the top 4 hitters if Pasquantino's there that do a vast majority of any damage this postseason. The rest of the guys, just get to Corbin Burnes, drive up that pitch count, get him out of the game. That's your goal in this first game. We'll have much, much more on that. And this season in totality in the second hour, we'll, of course, be able to preview the game tomorrow as well. But we will have much more on Royals baseball coming out. All this baseball talk is right here on your home of the Kansas City Royals, and we can't wait for it. All right, we'll come back. Wyatt Thompson. We'll talk a little K-State football when we return. Wyatt Thompson joins the show. Big win for the Wildcats. Here we go. It's a Reaction Monday. We're coming right back with more on Sports Day. Welcome back in, everybody. We appreciate Prairie Fire Coffee each and every morning here at KFH for providing us some great coffee. And we welcome in Wyatt Thompson now, primed up, caffeinated, ready to go, ready to join the program, voice of the K-State Wildcats. You can hear K-State Athletics right here on KFH each and every week. You did on Saturday, and you heard, well, what becomes, I think, the next most impressive win of the season, because it comes in that game, and it comes against Oklahoma State, who I do think will be there by the end of the year, Wyatt. But, you know, we wondered, I remember the last week at some point we asked the question, is K-State more like the Arizona K-State or more like the BYU K-State? And I think we got our answer on Saturday.
It sure seems so. Good to be on with you guys. Yeah, it was a really good performance. I think at the end of the day, when you play the kind of football game that K-State played, you have to walk away feeling pretty darn good about the way they bounced back and the way they prepared after the loss at BYU. I think BYU has proven, to be honest with you, to be a pretty decent football team, especially on the defensive side. They did have to hold off the Baylor Bears late in Waco, but did so, jumped on them early. I understand now that Baylor had a few guys out with injury, and there were a handful of other guys that didn't play because of disciplinary issues, but still an awfully good win there. But back to K-State, I think at the end of the day, there was major disappointment in the way the game ended at BYU, and they really kind of, I guess, refocused, I guess I'll say. And Coach told me after we got off the air Saturday, I went over to see him for a little bit and congratulated him, and he said that he was so proud of him because they really just went back to work and kind of, as they called it, kind of shut out the outside noise, good and bad.
Wyatt, I kind of feel like the biggest takeaway, at least for me, from the game was after seeing the way that Kansas State against BYU really struggled in the red zone. They were extremely effective in the red zone against Oklahoma State, scoring touchdowns on all 4 of their drives that ended up inside the 20-yard line of Oklahoma State. To me, that's not just a fluky, they didn't do it against BYU, and then they did do it against Oklahoma State. I think it's more of, I mean, clearly that had to have been a focus in the week leading up to the game.
I couldn't agree more with that, to be honest. I just felt like their focus was a lot better in this game on a lot of different things, and that was certainly one of them. I think you guys could probably tell from the opening bell, too, that K-State's approach was going to be a little bit different. I knew going into the game that they were going to be without Braden Lofton and that Garrett Oakley, their number one tight end, is probably not real close to 100%. So what happens? Well, it's next man up mentality to a degree, and we saw Will Anzio from down in Wichita do a really good job and catch that. That wasn't an easy catch on that jump pass, by the way. Go look in the replay from the angle of south looking to north. He had to get up there a pretty good ways to get it. But they also, I guess the other real point here is that they kind of changed a little bit early on what they did. They went 4 and 5 wide, spread Oklahoma State out, and I think that ran into the fact that they could run the ball. And they ran for 300 yards in the game. So it was really a good performance.
It was a good performance from the quarterback. If you look at the biggest difference, it was mistakes not made in this one. You had the early mistake and then a quick bounce back. But that was Avery Johnson at close to his peak, I think. 19 of 31, it's pretty good completion percentage. He had deep plays. He was precise. I think every time we see these analysts on TV see the velocity at which he can throw the ball around the field, they're kind of like shocked live on air. Yeah, at least I can see. They're just like, whoa, that was impressive to the sideline or whatever it is. But here's what I thought was really interesting. Of those 19 completions, 13 of them were to wide receivers. We've sort of been waiting on that a little bit too, Wyatt. Like, when are these receivers and Avery going to connect? Well, this game, they absolutely did.
And I wanted to say to Jaden Jackson after the game and didn't get the chance, welcome to the party, pal. Kind of the old Bruce Willis line. You know, it was so great to see him contribute. K-State needs that because he's always kind of had it in him, right? Athletically and experience and all of that, to have him be a part of it. And we see Jace Brown getting kind of back to where he was after a slow start to what he was at the end of last year, half of the year for sure, if not a little bit more than that. Keegan, I think, has been a little bit more consistent and, knock on wood, a little bit more healthy this time. And, I just think you're right. Going back to what you said about Avery, he was able to put that mistake behind him quicker. And I think his whole approach was different this week. Aggressive. I think the play calling and the team was more aggressive around him, and I think he kind of went with that, and it turned out really, really well. We all know what kind of talent he is. We talk about that all the time, but he's learning so much so fast, I think, and the coaches just rave about how he handles everything. It's not perfect, and he was the first to take the shots of what happened at BYU, but man, it's how you handle it, right? And how you move forward and get better. And I think he got passing grades in that area this time.
You know, I remember a week ago, Wyatt, after the BYU game, talking about how things really snowballed out of control really quickly for Kansas State, and limiting the damage, I think, was probably a major focus going into the game against Oklahoma State. There was a really critical juncture in the game in the second quarter when Oklahoma State took the lead. It was their only lead of the game. And then immediately after Oklahoma State took the lead, Avery threw his only interception of the day. The defense then limited Oklahoma State to just a field goal. And then at that point, the Wildcats were off to the races. So again, it was something that, clearly a week ago, they weren't able to do defensively, limiting the damage and not letting things snowball out of control. They did a much better job defensively of making sure that things really didn't get out of hand.
It's such a great point, and I will try to augment it this way. When you think about the game from this past weekend, when K-State's defense was put in a tough position, they responded in a much better way than they did on the road in Provo. I know it's easier to do that at home when you've got 51,000 rooting for you. I understand that. But it wasn't just a play or two. It was several plays. I was really proud of the defense, and just in terms of the number of guys they continue to play, how those young players continue to grow into their roles to augment some of the people like Brendan Mott and, Austin Moore and Jacob Perry. So I thought Jacob's game was fantastic. Austin Romain really is playing at a very high level as a true sophomore, man. He's just come back so, so well. Just quality effort, man. You get the couple of picks. You force the fumble with their quarterback, and you get on that. They just made a lot of plays.
So I've been, Wyatt Thompson, voice of the Wildcats, joining us. I've been thinking about the defense, and BYU is such an aberration. They just didn't do much offensively on their way to 38 points. They only had 237 yards of offense. So mm-hmm. I don't even know how to look at that game, honestly. But when I look at the two impressive wins this year, Arizona and Oklahoma State, it seems like K-State is wanting to be a certain way defensively. I think maybe, and I know some of this has to do with the offense and running up the score a little bit, but it seems like they want teams to throw on them a lot to create opportunities. Like, I look at that Oklahoma State game, and if Ollie Gordon's going to run the ball 15 times and they're going to make Bowman throw it 50, like, yeah. I think every defensive coordinator in the country would love to see that, right? kind of the same thing against Arizona. Fifita threw it 42 times in that game. I don't know if that's a trend. I don't know if that's what they're wanting to do, but it kind of feels like they're wanting to sell out to stop the run and make teams throw it on them.
It is a really interesting subject, and I'll tell you why I believe that. Because when you look at the game, I really don't pay a whole lot of attention necessarily, a little but not a ton, to the opposition and what they're saying after games and what have you. But this one was a little different. There was a lot more reaction. You know, I think Casey Dunn, their offensive coordinator, took a lot of criticism after the game because Ollie Gordon had 72 yards in the first quarter and not a lot of touches after that. But I don't know if it was as much they went away from him as that they couldn't run very well after that first quarter. K-State adjusted. They were getting
sold
stuffed.
Out to stop
yeah,
the run.
Yeah. And so there you have, you know, 50 throws. And you mentioned how much Arizona rushed the ball. If you watched any of their ball game the other night, they played at Utah and held them to 10 and played very, very well. I said after K-State beat them here that they're really a talented football team, and I continue to believe that. Where are they going to end up in the race? I don't know, but it's been an interesting early part to this league race because I think you are seeing some ups and downs, which you all expect for the most part. But did we really expect Utah to get beat at home after winning in Stillwater? Not me. That's what makes this so much fun, I think.
Yeah, and I think that brings up a really good point, Wyatt. I mean, with apologies to BYU, I mean, knowing the way that Utah has kind of struggled without Cam Rising and, of course, losing at home over the weekend to Arizona. I know Arizona is a solid football team, but even though Kansas State fell to BYU in the conference opener, right now, I'm not sure there's a better team in the conference than Kansas State, just from top to bottom, or at least a more complete team. Of course, we're still early on, but it's wild the way that even through two conference games, this league has just, you know, kind of been a mess.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because I think another really, really good topic, and here's why I say that. Here we are, what, 10 minutes into our conversation. We haven't even mentioned DJ Giddens, who is averaging 7.3 yards per carry on the season.
Yeah.
On the season. Yeah. And when you look at K-State defensively, guys, they're giving up 91.8 rushing yards a game. And for the season, they have given up a total of 9 touchdowns in 5 games. That's great work, no matter how you cut it. 100%.
It's wild to think about this offense. Dylan Edwards, by the way, had his 10 touches in the game. I think that's a pretty good number for him. As we look ahead, that Utah loss is handy. K-State will get to play West Virginia. They'll get to play Iowa State. They'll get to play Colorado. Those are 3 of the remaining unbeatens. Of course, they'll need BYU to lose a couple of times and Arizona only to lose 1 time. Mm-hmm. And they'll be in good shape. I do think they're in pretty good shape. This is an interesting part of the schedule for them because you get Colorado, Colorado's better than we thought after 1 week. They're probably closer to what we thought they might be. Mm-hmm. And then that trip to West Virginia, back-to-back road games. They'll be favored in both of these games, but this is one of those tricky little parts of the schedule before the Kansas game. I will say, though, Wyatt, of all the, all the scheduling talk, they're sort of through that part that really frightened us now. You look at the next, I mean, they won't potentially be non-favorites until the final game of the regular season. They'll be favorites in each of the next 6 games they play on this Big 12 schedule.
I'm really anxious to see if we get a game time for Colorado. As you guys know, K-State is in a bye week this week. They play Colorado a week from Saturday in Boulder. And I just wonder out loud here a little bit. We all know that television loves primetime, right, Dion? And I'm just wondering about, will this be a 2:30 ABC game? Will it be a, 6 o'clock or 6:30 Big Fox game? Who knows what it's going to be, right? But I do think K-State could be favored in the game, and I think you're right in maybe if K-State is favored, maybe the next time they won't be is going to Ames. So they do have a very interesting schedule coming up here. I believe that this bye week is coming at a really good time because they are dinged up in a couple of areas. This will give them a chance to really have a couple of days away from it and then hone into what I think is going to be a hard game. If you watch their game at UCF, the scary part is that, yeah, Shador can throw it all over the yard. He was like 28 out of 35, but they also ran for 120 yards. If they do that, they can beat a lot of people, man. So this is a very important stretch. And going to Morgantown is never easy, right? No. Never easy.
And Colorado gets the bye week too this week, by the way.
They yes, both that's
get
correct.
Bye, so you don't get that advantage if you're there. Yeah, that will be an interesting case study. You want quarterbacks to throw it 50 times? Do you want that? Do you want that quarterback to throw it 50 times? I don't know. He's pretty good. Yeah. I love it. I'm with you on the. I bet you this one gets put into a big spotlight. Colorado might even be ranked by then.
You know what? He's completing 70% of his passes, and they have some dynamic guys. I think the perception is it's just him and Travis Hunter, but watching them and studying them, especially in the last day and a half and what have you, I've done a bunch more than just that, but really getting after it, in the last day and a half. They've got some dudes with some experience, not all of it in Boulder with the Buffs, but they've got some guys that can play. And I think they're making some progress defensively, too. I just really am so intrigued by the league right now with all the things that are going on. And you think that you would assume, right, that Rising will be back relatively soon. I mean, he's missed a couple of games.
Hopefully not before they lose two games.
Well, yeah, I'm with you there. But, there are a lot of things that have, I won't say surprised me or maybe shocked me, but surprised me a little bit. Nobody saw this coming with Kansas as an example. Nobody.
No. And they're not as bad as their record, probably.
No, they've been in every game. Yeah. It's been decided late for the most part, and a pretty big slide for them now. So we'll see how it plays going forward.
All right, well, enjoy the week off, Wyatt. Hopefully it's nice and calm and cool and collected for you because next week's going to be a big one when we talk again. I think Colorado could get into that top 25 by then, even without playing. Their wins are impressive, but we'll be ready to get people geared up for it next week.
Sounds great, guys. Great talking to you, as always. Appreciate it.
There goes Voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson. Always good stuff. If you joined us late, missed any of that, you can always go back and listen to it on the Odyssey app. Make sure to do that. All right, Tommy, let's reset a little bit here. We've talked a little Royals. We've talked a little K-State. We'll come back. We'll begin a much longer, I think, conversation on the Kansas City Chiefs and what we saw yesterday, what we'll see moving forward. They have become a fascinating story this year for good reasons and bad. But that's where we go next. Chiefs talk when we return on Sports Daily.
KFH.
Down by 10. They'll take over at their own 46-yard line, first and 10. Kareem Hunt will take his turn again at running back. In motion is Sky Moore. Moving short to the right is Mahomes. Gunning it long. Coming down the near side. The pass is caught. Touchdown! Kansas City! A long bomb! And the Chiefs finally get there! A 54-yard bomb to Xavier Worthy. Patrick Mahomes, a perfect throw, burning Christian Fulton.
As heard on the Chiefs Radio Network, which you hear, of course, each and every week over on KNSS, that's the great Mitch Holthus on the call as the Chiefs get the win over, well, another good team, I think, right? Chiefs now 4-0 against four pretty good teams. This time the Chargers with Herbert actually playing. I know they were a little nicked up, but they've been good this year. You feel great about 4-0 anytime you can get it in the NFL, especially when you look across the league at the strange things that happen. But there are the Chiefs now. They get their win. But the term I keep thinking is, at what cost? We're now through 4 weeks of the NFL season. The Chiefs are without Hollywood Brown. The Chiefs are without Rashee Rice. The Chiefs are without Isaiah Pacheco. This is a problem. So we see yesterday the Chiefs react and adjust and do all the things. Patrick Mahomes actually ended with a pretty good game, right? 19 of 29, 245 yards. He had the pick, which was what led to the Rashee Rice injury. But other than that, it was pretty good day for Patrick Mahomes, all things considered. When you look at, you know, the receiver share, though, it's pretty interesting. Justin Watson had two catches. Worthy had three. That's five catches for the receivers. It was a big Kelce day. Noah Gray had some big plays. Kareem Hunt. I don't know what they're going to do. I have no idea what they're going to do. They need to run the ball still. And they did with Kareem Hunt, who got in, Tommy, and looked pretty good. But you take the win. You're 4-0. When you look across the league at all the strange things happening. And again, the Chiefs aren't the only team facing injury right now. By the way, the team they beat yesterday, I think I tweeted this, like, no excuses with Rice out. The Chiefs are still should win this game, right? Because the Chargers have about nine dudes sitting on the sidelines right now that are good players. Just about every team in the NFL does. So as you look at it in one game, that's a game the Chiefs needed to win, and they did, and they figured out a way to do it. You know, on the surface, you feel good about that part of it at 4-0.
Yeah, they're the strangest 4-0 team that I've ever seen, just because of the way in which they've won those games. But I saw somebody mention this on social media after the game and the aftermath of everything, that once you get into January, you don't remember how you won games in the month of September. And I do agree with that to an extent. You know, if you can get into the playoffs, we all know that the Chiefs last year sort of stumbled their way in, you know, because it wasn't a great regular season for them by their standards. And then at that point, it was kind of like resetting the season. They were 0-0 at that point, and they went on that run, and they ultimately won the Super Bowl. So, you know, I think a couple months from now, you probably look back on these four games, not really remembering or really caring all that much the way in which they did win these games, or the struggles that maybe they had, whether it was offensively or, you know, going back to some of the previous games, even defensively, some of the things that they struggled with. So I do think that you have to sort of strip away a lot of the weirdness that we've seen thus far, and just realize they're 4-0, and that's the important thing. But that's easier said than done when you're in the moment and you're watching these games and you're pulling your hair out and you're like, what in the world is going on, especially offensively with this team? I always go back to, and I realized this when I was watching the game yesterday. I remember, and you and I have referenced this before, Mitch Holthus coming on this show during the summer and talking about how he felt like the defense was going to be even better this year than a year ago. And I think both you and I were kind of like, okay, you know, like we'll believe it when we see it, you know, type thing with the people that they lost. They were fantastic yesterday. You know, after the Chargers went up 10-0, that defense locked down, and especially stopping the run, they've been phenomenal at that. Not just yesterday, but all season long. They're sneakily one of the best rush defense teams in the National Football League in limiting top running backs when they played against Kansas City. So that's something that I do think you can hang your hat on for sure. Steve Spagnuolo is probably, actually definitively in my mind, the best defensive coordinator in the National Football League. So there are some things you can hang your hat on, but by and large, yeah, it's been a bizarre start to the year.
So last week we talked for a little while about the Chiefs being comfortable in this brand of football. I think that now I don't think they don't have a choice but to be comfortable in this brand of football. This is going to have to be their brand of football. I've said this, and man, I thought it about 15 times yesterday. This Chiefs team feels like one of those Patriots teams that never seemed like they were great at anything, and they would win all these games and go on to win a Super Bowl, right? Like the early Patriots teams, let's say, that were really good. Like, if you look back at those teams offensively, like, what did they even do well? They were pretty good running teams, right? They didn't really ever have any star receivers. They didn't have Gronkowski or Aaron Hernandez back in those days. Like, they just kind of figured out a way to get through, played really good defense, and had a quarterback who could make plays. And that's how, you know, in a lot of ways, that's how the Chiefs won their Super Bowl last year. Now, Rashee Rice ended up being a star by the end of the year. But I don't know offensively if this team even needs an identity. And quite frankly, I'm not sure they can get one at this point. Maybe by the end of the season, but not right now. But I do think that they are capable, I think, of riding this style out to at least get to the postseason. If it's enough there, I'm not sure. The defense is fantastic. If they play against the run as well as they did yesterday against one of the better running teams in football so far, then the Chiefs are going to be just fine. Because if teams can't run on them and you free up Jones and Spagnuolo to get after a quarterback a little bit, the Chiefs defensively, they can be really, really, really good. And maybe even as good as they were a year ago. If they stop the run the way they've been stopping the run.
Yeah.
And that will help, because offensively, like, I nothing is going to snap them out of this. They don't have enough dudes. Like, they just don't have enough players.
And look, defensively with the run defense, we're not talking about a small sample size of one game or even two games. We're talking about four games. We're talking about, you know, a quarter of the way through the season. The Chiefs' run defense through four games, I mean, they have really shut down the guy for each team that you would consider their feature back: Derrick Henry, Zach Moss, Bijan Robinson, J.K. Dobbins. Those four guys are averaging under 3 yards a carry in those four games.
And they're really good this year.
They are really good. I think, you know, J.K. Dobbins had been averaging, I think I heard this on the broadcast, more yards per carry than any other running back in the NFL entering the game yesterday against Kansas City. They limited him to 32 yards on 14 carries. Bijan Robinson was the same way. Those other guys, of course, Derrick Henry feasted yesterday on Sunday Night Football. So those four guys that have been the lead backs for their respective teams when they've gone up against the Chiefs defensively have shut them down. And that has been absolutely crucial, especially if you go back to the Cincinnati game and remember the whole dialogue about how the Chiefs' tight end defense was really poor in that game. That's not been a strong suit for Kansas City defensively this season, but they've been able to make up for that sort of thing, or, you know, maybe a couple of lapses here and there in the secondary, or maybe even a lack of a pass rush early on in the season by just shutting down the run game. They have forced teams into throwing the ball and really, in a lot of cases, changed the game plan for the opponents. The Chargers entered into that game not only wanting, but really needing to run the ball hardcore because of the injuries that Justin Herbert has had and just the way that the passing game has evolved for LA. And the Chiefs defense said, we're going to make you throw the ball. We're going to make Justin Herbert get uncomfortable in the pocket. We're going to make him have to run around for his life. Really, the only success that the Chargers had offensively were a bunch of misdirection plays. They had to get kind of cute to try to beat Steve Spagnuolo's defense. But other than that, it was kind of a clinic, especially in stopping the run for Kansas City yesterday.
It is honestly... Is it the most impressive thing we've seen in the NFL so far that the Chiefs are 4-0? I think it probably is, because they haven't had three of their top four options offensively in that game. Essentially, they haven't had two of the four for basically the entire season, and here they are. Mahomes is not playing. He's not like shouldering the load and carrying and willing this team to victory. Like, none of that's happening. None of it. And so, okay, like, they're 4-0, and they've played four good teams, four teams that look like they're at least playoff contenders thus far this year, and they're 4-0, and they don't even have anybody offensively anymore. It's wild. It's wild. Real quick, Kareem Hunt looked good. Kareem Hunt looked better than Carson Steele. I say good. He looked better than Carson Steele. He looked good enough.
He looked good. I mean, I'm willing to
just stop
right
there.
Yeah,
he had some explosion. He had some explosion. 15 carries for 70 yards. You're gonna take
that every
you're
day.
You're gonna take that. It's because it's over 4 yards a carry, and that's basically what this team needs to do. Carson Steele unfortunately fumbled again. We probably won't see a lot of Carson Steele for a while. If Kareem Hunt does look that way, they trust Kareem Hunt. They'll need his receiving chops almost certainly. So That's a positive development to get there. All right, real quick, we have a Chiefs message on the Odyssey app. If you would like to leave us voice messages, you go there. There's a little microphone if you listen to us that way. You punch it, you send us a voicemail, we get it. Jad gets those. We'll take one on the air. Because when we come back, I want to talk about what the Chiefs do potentially on, you know, in the trade market, if anything. But let's hit this Chiefs message from Jason before we go to break.
Hey, guys. I'm really excited and encouraged by the Chiefs' performance. I thought Kareem Hunt running almost 5 yards per carry showed really good lateral movement. He would get to a hole and be able to move left or right on the line of scrimmage to find a more open hole, something that Pacheco tends to struggle at. Additionally, he ran for over half a yard per carry more than expected per the analytics I was reading, which is the first time a Chiefs runner had been positive in that area in quite some time. I think they could fix wide receiver. I'm looking at you, Tennessee, as a good trade candidate, and I hope that they can start to get healthy, but the run game has me really encouraged, and I think if the pass game can come along, they'll be a pretty devastating offensive team. And the defense looked good. Have a great day, guys.
Appreciate that, Jason. I don't think the pass game is going to come along unless they add to it. Kareem Hunt looked good. The thing about Hunt is his explosiveness looked good, Tommy. I don't know if he's still a game-breaking play guy like he used to be, right? Like if he could break him off like he did for so well as a young player for the Chiefs. But his explosion from start to the line of scrimmage was better than I thought it would be. I mean, he was right. He said he's ready. He said he's got it still, and he was right. I mean, it did look good from that point.
Yeah, I think he looked 5 years younger than he did in the game. I mean, he really was able
better than he has with the Browns.
And,
I agree.
And you know what? I think that some of that you have to chalk up to this sort of is a reunion. I mean, it definitely is a reunion. It's kind of a redemption story for Kareem Hunt. And I'm sure that if you had asked him a year ago, even maybe 6 months ago, if he envisioned himself getting an opportunity to be RB1 for the Kansas City Chiefs again in his career, he probably would say there's no way in hell that would happen. And here we are, and they need him. And so it's a good match. It's a good fit. And I think that he will be the lead back moving forward for Kansas City.
It's been 6 years. 6 years, yeah, since all that. Isn't that crazy? 869-1240, the IHOP hotline is back open for you. We're going to come back. All right, we'll start the next hour with more Chiefs talk. And when we do, we'll look at what can they do now with pass catchers. Can they go find somebody? I think they have to try, but, you know, there's all kinds of names out there. We'll get into all of it when we return. Sports Daily, hour number two. It's all Brockton Caster, Jad Chambers producing. Don't go away. We're coming right back.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrocht and Tommy Kester.
And welcome back in, everybody. Hour number two here on Sports Daily. We'll be discussing what the Chiefs can do at wide receiver. Real quick, though, this just coming in during our break, sad news in the basketball world. Hall of Famer Dikembe Mutombo has died at the age of 58 due to brain cancer. I did not realize he was sick, was not well. That was a pretty big shocker to me. We were literally just talking about him yesterday at my kids' soccer game. And I bring this up because it's one of the reasons I love Dikembe Mutombo. We were talking about one of the second grade goalies and how the parents were training her to make stops, and like they were using the Dikembe Mutombo finger wag as a way to like hype her up and get her attitude going, you know, not in my house. I love Dikembe Mutombo, Tommy. He's always been one of my favorite players. I think he was such an interesting basketball player and character on and off the court, brought, and I mean this like genuinely, like that dude loved basketball and he loved life, and you could see it and feel it. And I always loved that about him. I'm really, really bummed out by this.
Yeah, it's really sad. And like you, I didn't know that he was sick either. And he had really been able to, you know, take that finger wag and everything that you know about him and the character that he played and continue that after his retirement. You saw that in commercials on TV. And really, there are few athletes that, are able to maintain or even grow that popularity after their playing career is done. And Mutombo was definitely one of those guys. And even just talking about his accomplishments on the court, like, I'm trying to think, has there been a better shot blocker in the history of the NBA than Dikembe Mutombo? I'm not sure. I mean, he's at the very least probably top three.
Ratliff was really good there. But no,
yeah,
I don't think so. I mean, I think some people view Wemby as getting to that spot potentially, but for my money, no. I don't know that I remember a better defensive player, period. Like, Mutombo was a rock star. Man, he won Defensive Player of the Year 4 times.
You know, there's only one player that has more blocks in his entire career than Mutombo, and that's Hakeem Olajuwon. And so Olajuwon's number one, Mutombo's number two, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar number three. So, you know, you're in pretty good company there when you are with Olajuwon and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So, definitely sad news for Mutombo and just was somebody that had a lot of fun on the court. You could tell that when he went out and played. He was in an era of players, like really great, iconic dream team players in the NBA. And so I'm not sure that he gets the praise or the attention that some of those other guys in that era do. But he was a phenomenal player, phenomenal shot blocker, and a great character.
Really sad for Dikembe Mutombo, but just wanted to get that in because that just came down. All right, we'll transition, and it's never easy to transition there into something else, but we will. We'll talk a little more Chiefs here in this hour. We'll be getting into what happened against TCU for KU. That's coming as well in this hour, and probably a little more on the Royals as we make our way through. This portion of the program, by the way, brought to you by Crestview Country Club. The weather continues to be great out there for some golf. It looks like as I drive by and everybody's kind of watching football and chasing their kids, plenty of tee times. They got 36 holes you can play. Tommy and I, both members out there, haven't been able to play a lot of golf here lately, but we're going to try down the home stretch. And you should get out there and check it out. Tell them we sent you. They'll give you a tour of the facility and you can see why we like it so much. All kinds of different membership packages. All right, let's talk about the Chiefs here, Tommy, and what they do moving forward. We're all really impressed with what they've done so far, but it's all about a Super Bowl this year, and you don't really care about anything else. I don't, you don't, the Chiefs don't, the players don't, the coaches don't. Everybody is concerned about winning a third Super Bowl. I think the question you have to ask yourself right now is this roster capable of doing that? I would still say yes, but I think it's dicey. So then the question becomes, how do you make the roster better, right? And I think that's a really interesting question. And I see all the names floating around that people want them to trade and, you know, oh, go get Amari Cooper and go get Deontay Johnson and like these names that I think would be great fits. But I'm like, guys, it's week four. These teams aren't waving the white flag in week four. Like, I don't even know. I don't know that there's any team in football that are willing to give up on their season and trade a star player right now. I mean, how could you do that? How could you sell that to your locker room? How could you sell that to your coaching staff? So if they make a trade, I don't think it's happening for a while, Tommy. I don't think there's a trade they're going to make going into week five of the NFL season.
Yeah, unless you're a team like the Panthers that, you know, you've already swapped out your quarterback and you might want to try to move a wide receiver or two. The Panthers did that before, by the way. Remember, they unloaded Christian McCaffrey when they let go of Matt Rhule a couple of years ago. That was pretty early in the season when they made that change. I've seen rumors that Doug Peterson could be the first coach fired in the NFL this year. The Jags are not good, and so that could be a team that if something like that happens, that you could look at maybe like a Christian Kirk or somebody.
He's pretty expensive. I don't know if they can afford him,
but
I think he just got a big contract.
Let me be kind of the downer, the Debbie Downer here real quick. The Chiefs are not trading for anybody. I can tell you that right now. As great as it would be to bring in Amari Cooper or Deontay Johnson or whoever, any of these names that are out there right now, I would be absolutely shocked if they made any kind of acquisition. the reason for that is because, like, I was even trying to think about this last night, who have been players, you know, especially wide receivers, that in the Brett Veach era they have traded for or they have acquired and they brought in midseason. The only one that I could really come up with, and maybe there are others, but the only one I could come up with was Kadarius Toney. And that was really exciting at the time when they brought him in because of his upside and his potential. But remember, even that year in that regular season, the first year that he was in Kansas City, he contributed a little bit, but it took a while to get up to speed. And that's why, number one, I don't think it's Brett Veach's style to go out and try to acquire somebody midseason like that. They had to go and sign Kareem Hunt to the practice squad because they didn't have a choice. Like, they didn't have running backs on the roster. They needed to go get somebody. There are enough wide receivers either on the roster or the practice squad right now that I think that Andy Reid and Brett Veach are going to try to roll with what they've got. And also remember the cap room situation. Like, they only have a couple of million dollars. I think it's around $4 million in cap space right now. And so while they could, in theory, go out, I saw the numbers last night that Amari Cooper only has a $1.2 million base salary. So you could afford to bring him in. He could fit in that cap room. That's not, I don't think, the MO that we typically see from Brett Veach and the Chiefs. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Well, and why would the Browns do it, right? Like, why would the Browns make that trade right now in week four? If they're going to make a trade, it'll come, you know, probably later in the season. And at that point, you're hoping a player can get in and get acclimated for the postseason. Here's the interesting dynamic on it, though, for me. Rashee Rice is going to miss this year if it's his ACL. Then he's going to get suspended at some point. You can't get suspended while you're hurt. So we may not see Rashee Rice, Tommy, until 2026, right? And then you have to ask yourself, okay, now there is more incentive, I think, if you're going to go get ultra aggressive to do something. There are a lot of people looking at, oh, Worthy is a first round pick. He's got to step up and be elite now. And guys, Worthy's not going to do that. That's not the player he's going to be this year. He's going to be probably a little bit better version of what we've seen so far. He'll become a better shot play guy. He'll probably command a few more touches, and he's a game breaking type of player. But he's not Rashee Rice. He's not, I'm going to catch 10 balls a game and have 12, 13 targets. He doesn't have the body type for that. He doesn't have the skill set for that. He's a totally different player. That's not what's going to happen. Juju Smith-Schuster is more like that, but he's clearly lost a step, right? So I think when you look at it, like, legitimately, you may not see Rice until either late 25 or at all until 26. Then I think you can begin later this season, because I don't think it's going to happen now, because I don't think a team's going to trade a player that you'd want to become like a big, meaningful. I guess my point is, Tommy, I don't see this as a Band-Aid issue. I see this, if you're going to go give up valuable capital, you don't do it for a short-term fix. You do it for somebody that potentially steps into that role for a long time, because that's what they're going to need. And if you can let that player help you this year and not make that kind of move in the offseason, then all the better. You know, Deontay Johnson is the player that you look at if Carolina, he's the first call I would make is to Carolina to say, what about Deontay Johnson? You got him there. But then Carolina, then who's Andy Dalton going to throw the ball to? They have some young guys. They have Leggett. They have Jonathan Mingo.
I think the question, though, if they call about Deontay Johnson, the question that the Panthers are going to have is, what are you willing to give up? Because, correct, like, this season for the Panthers, while it's been another disaster and they've got obviously major questions to answer at quarterback, what kind of motivation would they have to move on from Deontay Johnson other than, stockpile picks? Can we, you know, get capital in place to again continue to try to find a way to rebuild this? And that's the other thing too, is that it's not just the cap space, it's the amount of draft capital that Brett Veach would have to give up to go out and trade for a wide receiver right now. Let's just be real. The Chiefs are in a position of need, and other teams that might be willing to trade a receiver know that. So they can set a premium on these players to force the Chiefs into, you know, feeling as desperate as they can to go. And I don't think that's – Brett Veach doesn't play into that. So I just have a hard time thinking that's going to happen. Now, I think what's more likely to happen, and even this I'm not sure is totally likely, but what's more likely to happen is them going and signing somebody that's just sitting out there. Michael Thomas is sitting out there. Will that be impactful? Probably not. But that would but they would be, I think, more likely to go sign a free agent than give up draft capital, which we all know Brett Veach covets that so much each and every year.
I will say, though, he traded draft capital to get Frank Clark. He traded draft capital to get Orlando Brown. Like
mid-season, though?
And those were first-round picks mid-season? That he traded.
Well, I know he did. That's the difference in all of this, is that the price tag for one of these receivers is going to be higher than if it were in the offseason.
Let me ask it to you this way, because, yes, he has been willing to trade first-round picks. He's done it at least twice that I just rattled off there. So if you're willing to do that, if you're Brett Veach, if you're willing to do that in the offseason, because Rice is going to miss time into next year, you should at least be willing to do that now too, right? A player like Deontay Johnson's a good example. The difference with him is he's a free agent at the end of the year. He is the caliber of player, though, and the type of player that I would absolutely, if I was Brett Veach, trade a first-round pick for. No question, but you can't guarantee that he'll be here long term. I say that, though. What if there's a way, and he's the only player that's made sense to me because of the team he plays for and the fact that he doesn't factor into their future most likely. What if there's a way that you make that trade and you restructure the contract? And now you know you take less of the cap hit now, which is what they need. You push that out a little bit and you get him on a longer contract, right? He's not, you know, making Justin Jefferson money, but he's going to make really good money because he's a really good player. But I think he's 20. Yeah, he's already 28 years old, which is crazy to think about, but he is. He is a perfect stylistic fit for what they need right now. I think they're would absolutely be the justification to trade a first-round pick for a guy like that. Now, I wouldn't go and trade like four first-round picks for him, but if it was as simple as it, let me give you a hypothetical.
Yes, Jacob.
My watch is interested in this. Let me give you a hypothetical. The Panthers say, just give me your first next year, which I don't think that would be enough, but let's say it is. Your first next year. If I'm Brett Veach and I can do that in a sort of like sign-and-trade, I do that deal, no questions asked. Absolutely, I would make that trade. Now, I think the Panthers would ask for more than that. I think they should ask for more than that. And I would need to know that I can get him for more than just the rest of this season if I'm going to trade a first-round pick. So there's a lot that would go into that for Brett Veach to sort through on this. But I do think they can justify being more aggressive now because they've been able to justify it. Frank Clark and Orlando Brown didn't even turn out. They traded first-round picks for both of those guys. Does anybody regret that? I don't think so. And neither one of them were good enough to justify the picks. So if you're – and the Chiefs are willing to do this. They're a good enough drafting team later in the draft that they can. I think absolutely they should entertain ideas like that. Now, again, the problem with doing that in week five, there just aren't that many teams that are going to be willing to do it. And so that's where the challenge comes, I think, for Brett Veach. And probably the earlier in the season you do it, the more expensive the player is.
Yeah, and I think that that's going to ultimately dissuade him from going down that path. I mean, one of my favorite sayings is, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them. And Brett Veach has shown us time and again who he is. And yeah, he has given up first-round draft picks before, but not in situations like this. Not when his back has been up against a wall. I think some might argue that the Orlando Brown
trade, I think his back was against the wall.
His back was up against the wall, but not from a timing perspective, because that was in the offseason. That was getting ready for another year. It was coming off of a terrible offensive line performance in the Super Bowl against the Buccaneers, where the pressure was on him to get something done, but it wasn't like there was a game the next week that he had to get ready for. It was literally, we've got some time. I got to get something done before the start of the season. And then he ultimately was willing to trade that first round pick. I don't think Brett Veach, with his back up against a wall, you know, and apologies for, you know, this, uh, this phrase of having a gun to his head. But I mean, that's kind of like, I don't think he would operate in a position like that with his back up against a wall, with the game like this week, or, you know, games continuing on, to be sort of forced into giving up more than he feels like he should give up. Brett Veach is notorious for being pretty shrewd with the way that he does things. He doesn't work, I would say, quickly. Like, quickly is not the word that I would use to you know, or rash, I guess, in any kind of acquisitions, or like, he just doesn't do that. He never has. And so I think what's probably most likely, and this is just my opinion on what I think he'll do, not necessarily what he should do, but what I think he'll do, is they'll try to roll with the guys that they have. They might go sign somebody that's out there floating around, but I think that they'll more than likely just roll with who they have, hope it's enough. And then I wouldn't be surprised if they try to acquire somebody in the offseason, if the thought is that they are going to be missing Rashee Rice for a good portion of next season.
Well, they will be, because he'll get suspended. And we'll see, you know, we're already in week four on an ACL. Now, ACL recoveries have started to happen a little quicker than they used to. But even if it's he's ready for the start of next year, then he's got the suspension.
Right.
That will, at that point, almost certainly have happened. So I don't think it's a rash decision at all for the Chiefs to make a big splash trade here. I don't think it's a rash decision, because Patrick Mahomes affords you the luxury of being more aggressive, just like they have in other trades in the past. I don't think they will, though, until at least the bye week, which for them is early in the year. And honestly, while we didn't like that, you know, when it first came out, it maybe gives them a little chance to work it, and it may work to their favor. That's probably when you would see something happen if it does. I'm with you. I think they roll with what they have at least for the next 2 weeks. I don't know. Here's what I would suspect. I would suspect exactly what you saw yesterday. A lot of throws to tight ends, a lot of throws to the backs, very few throws to the receivers, and shot plays to Worthy. I think that is the passing game for the foreseeable future. And I do think that they will be on the horn making calls to teams to try. But what I don't want to see them do is, if you're going to go through the trouble of making a trade, like, don't trade a third round pick for a crap receiver, right? Keep the third round pick. If you're going to go make a trade for a receiver, it's got to be for somebody that's going to help you. It's got to be for somebody that's going to make you better, not for somebody that maybe will make you better. Because you can go sign those guys off the scrap heap. Go sign Renfro go sign one of those guys. If you're going to go through the trouble of making a trade, make it a big trade at this point. Because I think with Rice missing part of next year, it's an easy justification. You got to think about somebody that's going to help you next year too. And that's why. And again, I don't know yet if I think that'll happen.
I don't think that we should hold our breath that will happen.
If they come out and fall flat on their face, and I don't think, again, I'm with you. But if they come out and they're totally flat offensively in the passing game, they're going to feel a little bit more desperate. Because I would ask you this question. Are the Chiefs the best team in football right now?
No, they're not. They weren't the best team in football a year ago, and they won the Super Bowl. You know, so I think that probably has to play into it a little bit as well. They went 11-6 last year with an incredibly pedestrian offense, and ultimately won the Super Bowl. I think that probably plays into it as well. This is the same organization that has ridden Sky Moore to death over the last 3 years. And they continued to do that out of necessity yesterday. He had a big drop that Rashee Rice would have caught. Let's just be honest. Rice would have caught that. They didn't have him. They had to trot Sky Moore out there again. This is a team that has brought back Mecole Hardman on a couple of different occasions. They bring back Justin Watson. It's like they ride with the guys that they know, the guys that they are comfortable with, the guys that Patrick Mahomes is comfortable with, regardless of their upside or overall skill set or what they could do down the road. All the different things that are popping off the screen. You want to look at analytics all day long. You want to look at upside and film and whatever. That's all well and good. They ride with who Mahomes wants to ride with. They ride with the guys that the trust factor is there. Those are the receivers. And So putting all of that into context, I think it's extremely unlikely that we see the Chiefs make any kind of trade with another team.
Not yet. I think it's much more possible later. If you're asking me, do the Chiefs make any trade for wide? Do they make? Well, that's not fair. If I said any addition at wide receiver. Yes, I think they'll make an addition at wide receiver. If you're asking me if I think they'll make a trade for a wide receiver at some point this season, I would say I'll put it at a 60% chance that they do.
You're going to go over more, 50? Really? I'm going to take the opposite of that.
I think it's more likely they do something than nothing. But is it a splash trade, I think, becomes the bigger question. And that I don't really know yet. And
like, I think it's too early. This is a team that, and I'm just throwing this name out because I don't know his actual status and if he's, you know, available or not. But like, this is a team that I think is more likely to go out and sign Nico Remigio back to the practice squad, or Justin Ross, throw him back on the practice.
Like, that's
then go and call the Panthers about Deontay Johnson, or call the Browns about Amari Cooper.
Like, I think that's what they're going to do. That is what they're going to do. But then you have to ask yourself, what are the chances either one of those guys are actually meaningful contributors?
But that's not the question.
It is a part of the question, because if they're not, if you don't envision them making an impact, then that increases to me the chances that they'll have to go make a trade.
You know, if they do end up calling the Panthers, and I think he's still with the Panthers, I think they're more likely to bring in Amir Smith-Marset, bring him back to Kansas City, then actually trade for Deontay Johnson. Like, that's the sort of thing. I mean, remember, like, and I guess this is, I remembered Kadarius Toney. I'd forgotten, you know, the Chiefs acquired Mecole Hardman to come back from the Jets. And, you know, so it was like there were all of these other, and that was later on in the season last year, there were all of these potential wide receivers that were available and out there, whether to be traded for or to be signed. And the Chiefs brought back Mecole Hardman. Like, they're not going out and getting a high-impact, brand-new receiver who has never played in that system before. I just don't see it happening.
I mean, I think it's close to 50-50. I'm going to be excited. I will endorse, for the right player, a splash trade. I'll endorse it because they're not going to have Rice for part of next year, too. Whether they do it or not, it probably depends on the market as much as it depends on the Chiefs. I think they'll have an appetite for it. But no, I don't think they're going to go be stupid at the deadline. They're 4-0. They don't need to yet. Like, they if they keep winning games this way, which they will, then they're going to be fine. They're going to win ugly. And back to last week, I think they're comfortable winning ugly. As much as we don't like to see it, they're 4-0.
Can I just say one more time? You're going to roll your eyes. Sure would be nice to have Hollywood Brown right about now, but, you know, preseason games, they're important. So, you know, now
Tommy,
you're down Hollywood
and
you're down
Rasheed.
He could
have been hurt on the Rasheed. First play of the regular season game. Yeah. Obviously, Rice and Pacheco got hurt in the regular season.
He didn't even get a chance to play in the first regular season game.
And they've had four other injuries that happened in the regular season.
I know. It's unfortunate. Yeah. I think it'd be great to have him.
It would. It sucks that injuries are a part of football. Yeah. It sucks.
Especially in preseason when they don't matter.
Yeah, or the regular season, because they're not playing either way.
Yeah, but those do.
869-1240 is the number to call here on the IHOP hotline. We'll come back. We'll talk KU. Yikes, KU fans. I don't know what to tell you, man, but we'll try next. Don't go away. We're coming right back. Welcome back in, everybody. I'm going to tell you about Pep and Suter Remodeling, supporter of the program now, and we're glad to have Pepin and his team on board with us. Pepin did the remodel at my house over the summer. I've told you that. Did a fantastic job. As good an experience with a contractor, I think, as you'll ever see. Courtesy involved, which is a big deal for us. They have been available for any questions we've had after the fact. They redid our kitchen. They converted dining room into an office. We had things and ideas as he walked us through the process that we wouldn't even thought of. But I say this again, the biggest thing that I would take away is the cost. Pepin Suter's bid came in way under the competition, and they delivered on it, and they could not have been more courteous during the process. In a kitchen remodel, the day of you know, knockout, the day of whatever that's called, where they come in and they smash everything up, they that same day had temporary countertops installed and we could use our kitchen that night. Demo day, that's what it's called. On demo day, we could use our kitchen that night. They put in a temporary sink after they knocked out our old sink. So give them a call. That's 316-573-6822. Include them in your bidding process on your next home renovation or anything you're doing. 316-573-6822. Or you can go to Pepin, P-E-P-I-N, Suter, S-U-T-E-R.com. All right, Tommy, we come back with a little KU here. Man, oh, man, you were at the game Saturday. I'll defer to you on some of this. I would tell you that this, for the first time this year, did not feel like a game they were better than the competition. I think TCU was better. I would take away that Jalen Daniels is still not good. Under 50% completion again. They can run the ball, but now their defense is letting them down the last couple of weeks, and they can't play the way that just lets them be a run-based team when their defense is letting them down. This was the most disappointing loss to me at home, and now it's starting to spiral out of control a little bit.
Are you familiar with the longtime baseball statistician, Bill James? Remember him, like the guy that did sabermetrics and all of that? Yeah. So I don't, he's very active on social media, very active on Twitter. And for some reason, and I don't, I wasn't sure of the connection, if there was a connection, but he was like live tweeting the game. And he went in on KU in a variety of different ways. And everybody wants to lay the lion's share of the blame at the feet of Jalen Daniels. And I understand it. I get it. And I know that some may say that I've been nothing but a Jalen Daniels defender from day one and all of that. But even a guy like Bill James, who has made his career in analytics and being able to, you know, understand the way that that sort of thing works, he broke down the way the play calling, at least in the game against TCU, played its way out, where there were so many, I didn't realize this until I went back and thought about it. There were so many first down plays that were called. I mean, these were designed plays that it's not like Jalen Daniels, he was checking out of it or he was audibling and doing something different. These were the plays that were called that were incredibly difficult to complete on first down. You're talking like deep routes and things like that on first down that are just really like low percentage likelihood completion plays, which consistently set the Jayhawks into second and long situations, third and long situations. You know, then they're handing the ball off. They're getting 3 yards there. They're getting 4 yards there, you know, and then ultimately it's, you know, they're punting or they're whatever, that they don't continue their drive. And so that's been the way that it's been basically all year long, where I think I've said it before. Yeah, Jalen Daniels has not played to the level that we've expected him to play, but he certainly is getting zero help from the sidelines. And that's been everybody that was around me in this game, at this game at Arrowhead. Yeah, there was frustration on a couple of the throws that Daniels played. I know he had an interception. Take that off the board because that was garbage time. Like it was like a, you know, at the very end of the game type thing.
It's the completion percentage.
The completion percentage is rough, but also the way that those plays were called and the specific plays that they were did not do him any favors. And so I think that that has to be baked into it, because you can just look at the completion percentage on its own and say, yeah, it's not good. And it's not. There were a couple of throws that I saw, one in particular where he kind of had to move around in the pocket a little bit, was flushed out, ran to his right, threw off of his back foot, and the ball skipped to the receiver. And it wasn't like crisp. It wasn't sharp. It wasn't a pass that you would like to see from Jalen Daniels or anybody. So I believe that, and I'm bought into that he has definitely regressed, but he's not being put in good situations either. And this has been the case consistently week in and week out so far this season.
I agree with all of it. I mean, it's a combination problem. I think what frustrated me on Saturday was there seemed to be progress made against West Virginia when it comes to Jalen Daniels. I thought that was by far his best game of the year. And I don't think TCU was close to it. I don't even care what the reason is anymore. It's just not being fixed. One way or the other, it's not being fixed. So I don't know what to say. And now your defense is letting you down. Now your defense has given up 70 points over the last 2 weeks to West Virginia and TCU. What do you think is going to happen when you play K-State? Right? Like, what do you think is going to happen when you play some of the good teams in the Big 12? That's what I worry about. What do you think is going to happen when you play Colorado and Kansas State if the defense lets them down? My hopefulness going into, even going into this week, even I thought there was still hope, was that the defense would allow them the opportunity to develop a new identity. But if their defense isn't good, this is going to not get any better anytime soon. That's my problem. The Jalen Daniels Grimes combination is not going to work, right? That is a reality, however you want to slice it.
It's an oil and water type relationship. It ain't going to work.
It is absolutely not going to work. Okay, so let's set that aside for a second. They are still, should be, a great running team and are. They were against TCU, right? Both running backs were good. But if their defense doesn't allow them to feature that, it doesn't really matter.
And you know what? Statistically speaking, the Jayhawks offensive line has been really, really good. I mean, everything tells you that running the football has to be the number one priority, and they need to lean on it heavily, like so much heavier than they even have been. And they just they can't or won't do it. They refuse to do it. Devin Neal and Daniel Hyshaw have been a great tandem. Everybody knows that they're great. You know, there, and then if you can add in that additional wrinkle of, you know, Jalen Daniels every once in a while taking off, that should allow you to move the ball basically at will. And especially knowing how great that offensive line has been. It's not just Jalen Daniels also, because I know I've said this before in regards to the play calling, but it's more than that too. Anybody want to pay attention to the number of balls that Quentin Skinner and Lawrence Arnold have dropped this year? Like, there have been a couple. Like, there was one on Saturday that I know specifically was Skinner that was in his breadbasket, and he just dropped it. Like, that's happened a lot. It's basically been Jalen Daniels and Luke Grimm. That's been the connection, and that's it. The guys that had been so reliable a season ago have not been and if you're a quarterback that is struggling with his mechanics or trying to come back and shake the rust off, you've got to lean on the reliable guys to catch the ball to help you feel a little bit better about your game. And he's not really getting that at all.
It doesn't matter to me anymore. It doesn't matter. Again, Jalen Daniels and Grimes are not going to work. They're not going to all of a sudden be a great passing team this year. Not going to happen. Their only hope is to be a great running team. They can't do that if their defense isn't good.
Yeah,
they can't.
And the defense, the tackling has been abysmal the last couple of weeks. I was impressed with the defense when they played UNLV. The defense was the only thing
that
kept
them last week. Every week, I
mean, the West Virginia game, they fell apart towards the end and let West Virginia come back.
No, that wasn't a good. That wasn't a good game.
Wasn't a good game, but.
Through the first 3 weeks, it was a great defense.
Through non-conference, it was really good. And, you know, going back to what you said at the very beginning, that you felt like this was the first week that the Jayhawks were not as good as their competition, you're absolutely right. That was the first time I felt like, TCU is better than Kansas is. They're executing better. They're playing better. They're doing everything better right now than the Jayhawks are. Lance Leipold, and I want to touch on him for just a second, because there's been so much blame thrown around, and really, for a head coach, very little of it has actually gone at the feet of Lance Leipold himself.
People are scared to do that.
He deserves a little bit of it, though. Let's be honest.
He made the wrong
hire at offensive coordinator. That Jeff Grimes hire has not worked. By the way, whatever team, I think, is it Purdue? Whatever team hired Graham Harrell as their offensive coordinator fired Graham Harrell yesterday. So it can be done even this early on in the season. Lance Leipold needs to plant his flag in the ground and say enough is enough. We need to move on right now, even through five games. Move on from Jeff Grimes. Like, that has to happen. You can't let this continue, because it's not working. And on top of that too, Leipold has done, let's just call it for what it is, a really poor job in managing games this year. The Jayhawks have been really bad in the final 5 minutes of both first halves and second halves this season. And really, like, that's been, especially in the second half, when the game is on the line. They have not managed the clock well. They have not managed the play calling well. The situational decision making has not been good as far as play calling, as far as timeout calling, as far as any of that. It's not been good. And that's fixable. You can do that better. And I think that that's one thing that Lance Leipold will probably look in the mirror about himself as we move forward. If you can't change the skill level of the players, or like keep them from making mistakes on the field, the most you can do from the sideline is change your play caller. If you're not going to be able to put them in a better situation, then do something to put them in a better situation. Change your play caller. Get rid of the guy that you brought in because it's not working with largely the same team that you had a season ago. Those are all things that I think Lance Leipold should do. Will he do them? I'm not sure that he will.
Apathy, my greatest fear, is real close.
They're building a brand new stadium right now in Lawrence. And so much of it is based on just this optimism, this renewed optimism in the program long term. This has been, a dumpster fire. It's been a disaster of a year for the Jayhawks. And you know what? They announced, I just want to mention this. I was at the game. They mentioned the attendance was somewhere around 48,000. And it looked fine. It looked fine. I mean, honestly, it looked fine. That stadium is so huge. If it doesn't get turned around, I'm scared to see what Arrowhead is going to look like the final couple home games.
This cannot be a only look forward to the K-State game season, but that's where we're headed. And again, and others have pointed this out. The recruiting is, for all the like, it hasn't been as good as some of the Miles classes. So if the momentum begins to wane this year, what does it mean long term? It just is, but dang, so unfortunate. Maybe they'll turn it around. Defense has got to be better. I don't know what they're going to do. We'll find. They play this week. They play Arizona State. We'll have more on that game later. We'll talk to Sri Islata later this week too. See what the team, what the vibe, what everybody's saying. We'll come back. We'll talk a little more Royals. We open the show with the Royals. Our last full segment. We'll close it with the Royals next on Sports Daily.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Let's give away a little HTO here for you on this Monday. If you want to win some HTO, it's easy. All you got to do is text the keyword T to the short code 20357. That's TEA to 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Get your chance at a free iced tea, more than 20 flavors to choose from, or a free iced or hot coffee featuring free rain coffee, all your favorites, plus some exclusives to HTO available. Again, that's T to 20357. Good luck there, everybody. All right, Tommy, real quick on the Royals, and we will dig way into the Royals tomorrow as we'll have an opportunity before that game. This season as a whole, I think once we've reached this point, we asked this question. We didn't want to publicly do it because we didn't want to jinx anything. Would it have been disappointing if down the stretch there they didn't get to the postseason? I think it would have been disappointing. I don't think it would have been a disappointing season. I think you can wash all of that away now and play totally free and loose, house money feel. There is zero pressure on the Royals at this point. There is almost no case for disappointment now, and I think that's a dangerous thing for the teams that the Royals can play, because I do think that fits their identity a little bit.
I would agree with that overall. I differ a little bit as far as had they not made the playoffs. I think that, yeah, you could probably say that the season was disappointing because you get so close. You are in a position where you're one of the better teams in Major League Baseball for a majority of the season. In September, you collapse and fall out of it. Look at the Twins, for example. The Twins had an epic collapse where, you know,
sure,
just a couple of months prior, they were really, really good and in good position. I think that Twins fans would chalk up this season as a disappointment.
Yes, Twins fans
so
would,
I think that you can make that same argument for the Royals, but I think that there's a very important distinction. I told you this before, between a disappointing season and a failure of a season. It's not a failure of a season,
no,
but I think you can say it could be a disappointing season had they not made it.
Yeah, it may be a little bit. I think the difference for me is the seasons for 5 years now have been over in May. Like, you've been like, all right, well, the season's over. Now no matter what happened, we got at least a full run through September out of the Royals this year. And that would have been hard for me to call disappointing because I think the baseball has been entertaining for a while, which is what we should always hope for with baseball, right? That it entertains us in the summertime when there's not a whole lot else going on. Doesn't matter. Now they're in. We'll see about Vinny Pasquantino. Let's give it. I would call it, Tommy. I'll bet that I'm going to. But here's how optimistic I am. I'm going to say there's an 80% chance we see the Pasquatch in the lineup tomorrow.
I think we do, and it goes back to the number of times that Mike Gillespie from Kings of Kauffman has told us that when the Royals don't have great injury news, they keep it very quiet.
Yeah.
So if
yeah.
they're talking about it, and if Vinny Pasquantino is visible, which he
and
has
giggling
been.
Giggling about it in a celebration.
And J.J. Piccolo is saying over the weekend yeah. how great it would be to have him in the lineup. Like, it's more than likely going to happen.
Let's go. Let's go! We'll have it tomorrow. We're going to come back. We'll tell you what's on the network tonight when we return.